What's up, Yap Squad, and welcome back to another episode of the Yap Sesh podcast. If you are new here, my name is Brooke, and I am with my co-host Sawyer, and we are Yap Sesh, a fangirl podcast where we discuss all things fandom and nerdy and hope to share the experiences of women and queer fans everywhere. You can find us on Spotify and our YouTube channel, and now Apple Podcasts. Definitely, absolutely Apple Podcasts. I know we've been teasing that for like weeks, but we've actually made the account and uploaded some episodes. We are going to be uploading all of our old episodes and bonus episodes. I have it scheduled to upload one per day during the week, and then we'll have a little break on the weekends, and then hopefully we'll be all caught up, and then we will put all of our new episodes on Apple Podcasts too. But yeah, make sure to subscribe and follow us everywhere so you never miss an episode. How's it going, Sawyer?
I'm sad.
Why are you sad? Did something happen recently to make you sad?
Yeah, guys, we're recording this a couple days after they announced that they were not moving forward with The Acolyte. And if you have been a fan of the show, you know that we covered all the episodes and we are big fans over here. So we are both, I think I can speak for both of us and say we're both pretty bummed. But I am choosing to stay hopeful. I think this is not the end completely for some of these characters, so yeah, that's all.
it's a bummer, and I feel like if y'all want to hear us yap about it, we can do like maybe a bonus episode where we just yell about how it sucks. But I don't really want to do that here because it's an episode. We're having a good time. We have great guests and a great topic to talk about today. And I am coming down from an awesome weekend because I was just up in New York visiting Sawyer. That's crazy. It was super fun. We went to the New York Renaissance Fair, which is the only other Renaissance Fair that I've been to other than the Maryland one. It was pretty cool. I got to wear my Keyleth costume for the first time, and that was super fun. And it was great. It was a great time. And I'm like in fall mode now. I know it's August 21st when we're recording this. We still literally have another month of summer, but I don't care. I'm wearing my cozy sweater and I have my coffee at 8:47 p.m.
Amazing. I just finished my last coffee as well. I loved it. It was such a cool fair. I haven't been to a Renaissance fair in like 10-12 years. So we had a lot of fun, and it was so fun to watch so many people stop Brooke in her amazing Keyleth cosplay. So it's always a great time. But
it was cool. Yeah.
It was really cool. And I got to do upgraded version of my Lady Loki, which I am proud enough of that I will probably bring it to a con. So that is super cool.
Hell yeah. One more announcement. We have just launched our very super fancy special Discord server. And
what?
Yeah, it's crazy. We have we're in there. A lot of our previous guests are in there. And if you would like to join as well, you can maybe, I don't know, join our $1 a month Patreon subscription for access to the Discord server. We're going to give you some exclusive content in there. We will let you all know the guests that we're having on episodes like ahead of time. And if you have any questions specifically for those guests or for whatever the topic at hand is for the episode that we're recording, we will make sure to take your questions and answer them on the pod. And maybe do a little game nights, maybe some watch parties of some kind as well.
Yeah, for sure. And we do have two different tiers of Patreon, of course. If you do join the more expensive tier, you get early access to our episodes that are unedited. So that's kind of crazy. 99% unedited, as we like to say over here. But yes, come join us. We already have a few members and it's going to be a lot of fun and I'm excited for it. But without further ado, we have a wonderful show for you tonight. Today, whenever you're listening to this episode, we've got two great guests. Another podcast is joining us tonight, and we are going to talk about Star Wars, which we haven't talked about in a long time. So let's get into it.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody. I am here with Savi and Linz, and they are the hosts of the Stardust Records podcast, which, by the way, I love the name so much. It's
Thank
great.
You. We're big fans of it, too. Yeah.
Thank you. we're fangirls in this house, so I would love if you all could introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about how you got started with podcasting, and then we always ask all of our guests what your first fandom was and what your favorite fandom is currently.
Wow. I always feel like I take the wheel on this one, but Linz and I basically started our podcast because of our friendship. So we actually met because of Star Wars. And I remember really late at night, we were like, what if we just kind of started recording our conversations about Star Wars? And it was around the time that Andor was being talked about. That hadn't exactly been released yet. It was quite a while before we even started the podcast, but we wanted to do it because of Andor releasing. That I know, but yeah, we incorporated our love for like music into the title, and Linz is very, I feel like, vintagey, and I feel like I'm very eclectic, so I feel like that's where the vibe kind of came from. But yeah, we were like, our conversations are kind of silly and we laugh a lot, and there are other women out there who probably don't have a place to, you know, talk about Star Wars with friends like we do. So we kind of had this idea where it was like, why don't we kind of open up some seats at our table, obviously not literal seats, but somewhere where a woman or someone who's been presenting, or even a man or like a young girl, or could sit down with us and kind of have this like metaphorical meal and talk about Star Wars with us and laugh. And yeah, that's really how it started our friendship. So yeah.
Yeah. I think we've kind of described it before as sort of a, you're meeting up with friends, old friends, new friends, just random acquaintances at a coffee shop, and you realize that you have similar interests, and then it kind of goes from there. So that's kind of our vibe.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, pretty same story for us, a little bit different, I think, because did you guys meet online or did you meet in person?
We did. Online. We met online.
Okay. Yeah. So same for us. And I would say that our vibes are pretty cozy as well. I don't know if we're coffee shop cozy or if we are yapping with your friends cozy, but you know,
we're like you met some girl who's a little too loud talking about things that she's interested in, like at the bus stop, and then won't stop talking to you even if you're not interested. That's kind of our vibe, but like
I get like
safe space in a club bathroom, like girlfriendship. Ooh, like
there you go.
Just like that. Yeah. Or like you just changed my life, and it's like that. Yeah.
That's, you know, I've seen this, there's, I can't remember what her username is, but there's this girl on TikTok that's like, the mean girl is actually like a girl's girl. It's like one of those POV videos. And that's how I feel like my vibe is sometimes, because I have like major RBF, but I'm also very nice. I'd like to think that I'm very nice. So
I'm much more willing rather to co-sign that advertisement. And I think it's true, because I think the comment that we get the most from our guests on this show is that they feel really safe in this environment, and that's what we're going for. So, but before, I want to talk more about podcasting, just because of our connection with that. But as Brooke said, both of you gotta do this. It's a tradition. Okay. So first fandom and favorite fandom.
I'll go first. I volunteer as tribute.
She's ready.
So my first fandom that I really, my soul, my little preteen soul was very invested in was Avatar The Last Airbender. It was everything to me. I watched the premiere as a little crouton. I was there. And so that was my first fandom. And I would still count that as one of the fandoms that I still feel cozy about. Like, I would go back to it. I would still engage with it. I would still read fanfiction from it. But I would have to say my favorite fandoms, and one of my older fandoms still, is Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, it can't really go wrong with those. So I'd say that right now, those are my two favorite fandoms still to this day.
Very nice. Are you excited for The Rings of Power season 2?
Oh my God. Yes. I'm so excited. I've been adding to my like library of Tolkien books. I already had a pretty decent library, but I've been adding to it recently in anticipation to like have all the resources to look through for all the like, I don't know, Easter eggs and stuff in Rings of Power and references. So I'm so excited.
Nice. How about you, Savi?
The first fandom wasn't so different, but instead, like, first fandom that I actively engaged in was The Legend of Korra. I loved Legend of Korra. I had, like, a Tumblr for it. I was a big fan of the Red Lotus characters, like Ming-Hua and them. And that was, like, my first introduction to fandom, I feel like. Right now, my favorite fandom outside of the Star Wars fandom is the Interview with the Vampire fandom. I'm a really big fan of the Immortal Universe. I'm reading the books right now. I love the seasons that have, you know, been released already. I'm so excited for season 3. It's my favorite Lestat storyline. So the fandom is just like really fun and silly, and like loves the actors so much. And I got to meet some of them at San Diego Comic-Con, because I like camped out at the interview panel, and they're all kind of like giggling and laughing. But it's really fun. That one has definitely been super welcoming.
Cool. Yeah, that's one thing that I have not dove into yet, but I always say I can't be chill about anything, so I'm always afraid to start something new because I know the brain worms will just get in there, and I'm like, you know, I gotta take my time with these things sometimes.
Yeah, well, the thing is about, like, interview is that it, like, you're guaranteed to go a little insane because it's not your, like, typical television show. Your morals kind of, like, get thrown right out the window, mm-hmm. and the characters are really difficult and crazy. So I've had a couple of people tell me, like, that they didn't know that I, like, had that part of me inside of me hiding. So yeah, I honestly, it just came out on Netflix. So now I feel like that's the perfect time to get into it.
That's right. It is on Netflix. I think part of the reason why I didn't watch it is because it was only AMC Plus. And I considered getting AMC Plus when they were releasing all of those, like, Walking Dead spinoffs, but they also had the show on the AMC channel on Sunday night. So I'm like, if I don't miss a Sunday night episode, I don't have to pay extra for AMC Plus. But now I forgot that they're, at least the first season is on Netflix. So that'll be on my list for sure.
Yay.
Cool. But yeah, I know Sawyer wanted to talk more about, like, the podcasting sphere, because I think just from the two of you explaining your podcast and what drove you to start is very similar to us, especially being, like, women or femme presenting people in this fandom space. There are not a lot of podcasts that are led by women and focus on having female guests and things like that. So
no, I think that we are doing something unique. I think that, you know, there is an urge. I think every fan, and especially Star Wars fans, like, there's always an urge at some point to start a podcast. Mm-hmm. But I think, and Brooke and I have talked about this before, there are a lot of Star Wars podcasts that are focused on, like, news and the most recent trailer, most recent show, reactions, stuff like that. And there is always a time and a place for that kind of content. But a lot of it is very, very male driven, and a lot of the conversations that are had are, I don't want to say lacking nuance, but they lack a certain perspective. And I don't know if you guys have felt this way, if you've been a guest on other podcasts before, but I have always felt when I'm on a guest or when I'm a guest on a podcast that is mostly or entirely men, that the vibe is just like, I don't know when to speak, and I don't know when to, if my words are going to be taken seriously, or I don't know if people are going to resonate with the things that I have to say. But then now we're here and we have this show, and you guys have your show, and your show is incredibly successful. You guys have had some amazing guests, and just, again, the cozy vibes, and, you know, also really cool art for all of your episodes. But I don't know, what has your experience been with that? Like, what drove you? You talked a little bit about, you know, the connecting and having the same interests and wanting to start the show, but did you guys think about how, like, what kind of impact it would have when you started?
I don't know that we necessarily had a conversation about that, but I do know that I think both of us can agree that we felt that there was, I don't want to say not necessarily a need, because there's people who've come before us who that have been, like, femme presenting hosts on podcasts and things like that. But I think we really wanted, and this is circling back to what we were saying to begin with, we wanted a safe space for ourselves, and we wanted to invite people into that safe space. And so I think that that's kind of where our minds were at. And we, from the very beginning, we were like, we're doing this because we love it, and we're, you know, we love our friendship, and we are not going to do this if it becomes a burden to us, or if it becomes too stressful. Like, we're doing this to have fun. This is for fun. This is to share our love of Star Wars with everybody else, and people can tap into that, and maybe their love can grow as well. And so that's kind of, I think, generally where our vibe was at. Would you agree with us with that, Sabi?
Yeah. I mean, I guess to be a little bit vulnerable in a way, like, our podcast, like, took a little bit of time to take off. Like, there was a lot of effort that we put into it. There was a lot of conversations that we had where we were like, you know, did we come into the space too late? Or, like, are we being relevant enough? You know, all of those insecurities that come with, like, when people see lack of growth. But, you know, to go back to what you said, Sawyer, about, like, going on somebody else's podcast, and I think the feeling that I've gotten when I've gone on, like, a male dominated space podcast is that, like, they don't get as emotionally vulnerable as, like, we do, where Linz and I have talked about, like, characters that we want to see, like, kiss and things like that, where I feel like doesn't normally happen in, like, a very newsy podcast. So I think that that's when we kind of took a step back and realized that even though, like, it was taking a bit of time to kind of get on our feet, like, that was what was differentiating us from others, was that we were, like, opening up an emotional space And like I've talked about like my background, and Linz has talked about things where it's like you wouldn't normally hear on a very, I guess, serious podcast. We don't like, I don't know how to say it, but I think that we do like take pride in being a little bit different. I think that we like that we get emotional because it's like these stories are meant to pull a reaction from us. And like there are some episodes where you can tell like where we have genuinely had an emotional reaction to something, where there's been like moments of silence where we're just kind of like looking at each other and being like, what was that? But yeah, I'm trying to like collect my thoughts as I'm speaking, but yeah, just basically going off like exactly what Lynn said. Like I've been going off what Lynn said. She said everything.
Something that I think about too, that I think makes a podcast like Gap Sesh or Stardust Records feel so much safer is like I come from being on like short form content platforms. Like I started making content like really regularly on TikTok, and it's really easy for someone to watch a 30 second, 1 minute, 2 minute long TikTok or reel or YouTube short or whatever, and immediately go into someone's comments and criticize what they're saying or insult them or whatever. It takes a lot more effort to seek out a podcast that's more long form content and sit through, you know, the hour and a half of the episode and do the same thing. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Like, shout out to whoever, I don't even know, I'm not even going to name the YouTube channel that combed through one of our videos and used clips from our videos to talk about Star Wars being woke trash or whatever. I don't even know. I didn't watch all of it. So there are people that will still leave hate comments without, you know, even listening to the episode. Our very first episode we posted on YouTube got a whole bunch of comments. But it feels safer to me because there's a lot less of people doing that. And I think the people that are actually listening to us and taking the time out to catch up with our episodes and listen to each episode are people that are genuinely interested in what we have to say. I don't know if you two feel similarly, but that's just kind of like, it makes me feel safer to be in that vulnerable place where we can talk about like heavier topics or our feelings or whatever it is, if it's related to fandom things or just like personal.
Yeah, I feel like I've been feeling this way personally, especially around the time of like the Acolyte, is that I feel like I can't get vulnerable on a space like Twitter or TikTok because, you know, a lot of people can be very judgmental and like private quote retweet and like comment because there's no face to the words. It's kind of just like they have this newfound bravery that they've inflicted on themselves and they're commenting something without really like diving into their own heart and being like, why am I doing this? And with podcasting, I feel like I'm just looking at Lynn's. I'm not talking to a void. I'm talking to my co-host, my friend. So I feel like that like leaves a little bit of comfort that I kind of surround myself in when we're doing our podcast, because when the conversation is happening, it's like there's nobody on the outside that's coming in and saying anything and like making us feel down about what we're saying. And honestly, we don't necessarily like read our reviews or our comments. Mm-hmm. So whoever listens to it is listening to it. And if they think something about it, then that's what they think. But I like this form of media that we're kind of producing together because it's like, we don't have to read any comments and we don't have anybody like coming into the back of our head and being like, well, actually I disagree with this. It's like, if somebody disagrees with what we have to say on the podcast, then they don't have to listen to it or they could just fast forward. But I have really, really enjoyed this podcasting space because of the lack of negativity. I think like it feels like a very safe place to be. I don't know if that's the experience for everyone, but.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, obviously Brooke said we've had some haters, a lot of them come from our individual content. Just today, I was platformed. Apparently, I heard my video about the Acolyte being canceled was live streamed to thousands and thousands and thousands of people on one of the like big grifters channels, making fun of me. And there was also like a video compilation where I was front and center. I was like the first person, and I was the most featured person in the video. So, you know, a lot of the bad stuff, at least podcast wise, comes from those people. And it comes from the fact that, I guess I'll ask you, were you guys making content before the podcast individually?
I wasn't making any sort of video form or audio form content. I was just tweeting.
I was mostly tweeting. I've had like a weird relationship with TikTok. I actually used to have like a pretty, not big, but I mean, to me it was big. I had like an anime TikTok. I was like really into anime before I was into Star Wars again, and it was during COVID, so I was making TikToks like that. But I got hacked and I was never able to access it again.
Oh no.
I started the Star Wars one, and I'm still trying to, but so long story short, yes, to answer your question.
But I will say, like, in terms of like haters and like, you know, being targeted, I would say, and I think we would all agree with each other on this, it has not been, I've never seen it this bad. And I've been on Twitter, I've been on Star Wars Twitter since 2019. I remember Rise of Skywalker, okay?
Yeah.
I have not seen this much hate in my comments and other people's comments ever. Like,
yeah.
I've had so many, and I know it's been worse for some other people too, but one of the recent posts that I made, I was scrolling through it because I don't have my notifications on, but I thought I'd check up on it. And it's just like so many comments, just garbage, like just hate. And I'm just like, what is this?
Yeah. It ebbs and flows. I have time. I've kind of, I don't want to say distanced myself from the Star Wars fandom lately, but I've just branched my content out or to talk about a lot of other things. But especially the last few months with the Acolyte, these people just have to be searching the Acolyte or hashtags on Twitter just to respond. And it's like, it's so interesting to me that people will spend the time to do that. Like, they're so bothered that someone else can just enjoy something or be upset that something gets canceled or whatever. Like, I saw someone tweeted something about, like, you know, the incels are gonna, you know, be cheering or whatever for the Acolyte cancellation. And there's like 300 quote tweets all like calling this person a dumb bitch and saying, I'm not an incel. I just think it's a bad show and bad writing. But also you're a dumb bitch. And it's like, two things can exist at the same time. You can not like something and criticize it and also still be an incel. So there's that.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember I had tweeted something like as innocent as liking a very specific scene in, I think it was Acolyte episode 5, where May cuts her hair, and people were calling me like the R word and saying that I was like a whore, and somebody said I was a skinwalking whore, which is the most like interesting insult I've ever been called in my whole life. But I was like, that's crazy to call somebody that in their Twitter comments over a scene of somebody cutting their hair. And like, people are getting DMs, and I have mine turned off out of fear. And right now my Twitter is actually private, because of like really recent events of like people have been screenshotting me and like talking about me in ways that like are not true. And it's just like a very comforting feeling to have it be private right now. But
yeah
something I just feel like shifted, and it being canceled is, like somebody said, it felt almost like a little bit of a win for the fandom menace. Mm-hmm. And it does feel a little bit like that, if I'm being completely honest. But it's like, I don't know. I was talking to my husband and I was like, I feel like this is the first domino, at least like, or a bigger domino. And to what it leads to, I don't know. But it's been a little weird. Like, the fandom has felt very foggy, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
Agreed. It's not great. But we have some spaces, our podcasts. This is kind of why we started these things to begin with, is to create that space so we can talk about things that we love and enjoy, and hopefully keep most of the negativity and hatred and toxicity and all that stuff out of it. It's always going to be there, but I think there are ways that we can protect our own peace. I know, like, for me, I block a lot of accounts. I give myself social media breaks, or if I see something, I block or mute them, so I'm not even tempted to reply, kind of deal. So it sucks, because there's really no avoiding it, but we have created some spaces where it's a little bit more safe, a little more welcoming, and because of that, we are here to talk about the Women of the Rebellion, which I thought was a great topic, and is Star Wars things that is something that's not making me sad right now. So
yeah, I'm struggling, I'm not gonna lie. I feel like I should have disclaimer. I'm listening. I'm just having a moment.
You can have your moment.
Yeah, I appreciate the honesty.
We always ask our guests to pick a topic for the show, and when I asked you guys what you wanted to talk about, you first said Andor, and we love Andor in this house, but another suggestion you had was talking about Women of the Rebellion, and I thought that was a fantastic topic, because this is a show about the feminine side of fandom, and the feminine aspects of fandom, and what we are all Star Wars fans, and it is so, so, so true that women are at the forefront of rebellion in these stories, and that's been present since the beginning of Star Wars, which is a little bit rare, and it has had quite the impact on the way that these stories are told. So thank you guys for bringing that topic to our attention. But I wanted to start by asking, what was everybody's first female Star Wars character that they looked up to, and why did you gravitate towards that character? And anybody can go first.
I'll go first, so nobody takes it. No, I watched the original trilogy first, so as an impressionable young preteen, of course Leia was the person that I was drawn to immediately, especially because I wasn't able to watch the prequels closely after. I had to wait just a little bit to watch them, and so all I had in my brain was Leia. And that's the first Star Wars female character I was really drawn to.
Do you have any favorite stories with Leia?
Honestly, she shines in everything, but I would have to say I really like, there's comics that cover the time between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, and I really enjoy all of her storylines in there and kind of her efforts to find Han while also balancing like her role in the rebellion at the same time. I really, really love those like times, because she's without Han, so you kind of see her without him, and you get to know her as a leader in the rebellion without him around. And then also, like I said, she grows to love him even more in that year.
What about you, Savi?
I feel like I really resonated with Jyn when I saw Rogue One for the first time. I just loved that she was so unwilling at first, and how she kind of had to take a lot of convincing, and how she wasn't like this traditional hero that kind of jumped into the fight. Like it took inspiration from those around her at first. I loved her like firecracker Enis, I guess. Like I like that she was kind of really defensive, and like her fists were up a lot, and I just feel like I resonated with that a little bit. And how like emotional her scene was in the war room, where she kind of reiterated what Cassian said at the beginning of the story. I think my favorite story with her is actually, it's a non-canon cartoon. I'm forgetting the name of it. It was like Forces of Destiny, where she saves the Tuca cat, and she brings it back to her owner. And I loved seeing that like little helpful side of Jyn. And then also there's like another one where she helps Sabine, and like Sabine needs something that like Jyn was gonna steal and sell for money, and then like they kind of came together and Jyn gave it back. I don't know. I love that she's not like the traditional hero. She's kind of this like pint-sized, you know, creature of the night, I like to call her, but like she's silly and sassy, and yeah, she really called out to me.
I had a newfound enjoyment of Jyn's character after reading Rebel Rising as well.
Yeah,
so I feel like I got to know a lot more about her, since the book is like primarily from her perspective. So mm-hmm. read the books, y'all. Read Rebel Rising and all the Star Wars books, because they're so good. Sir.
Yeah, Star Wars book, let it be awesome. And to add on to that, Rebel Rising is by Beth Rivas, and Beth Rivas also wrote a book with Leia in it. So
yes, she did.
She's a scoundrel, so Beth knows what we want. Beth is great.
Yes. What about you, Brooke?
You know, okay, I was gonna say Rey, because the sequels is really like what got me into Star Wars. I didn't really, I would say, join the fandom until probably when The Last Jedi came out. That was the first one that I saw in theaters. And that's when I went back and I watched I had seen like The Phantom Menace. I loved The Phantom Menace when I was a kid. I did not know anything about it, but like I was the target. You know, they always say like Jar Jar Binks is for kids. I was like target audience for Jar Jar, because I loved him. I was like 4 or 5 when the movie came out. I was never really super into Star Wars until I saw The Last Jedi in theaters. It changed my life. And so I was going to say Rey. She is a character that I really connected with. She was the first Star Wars character that I ever cosplayed, and really my first full costume that I ever put together. All of the other ones I had done previously were more like closet cosplay things. But I remember really loving Rose Tico in The Last Jedi, And I, when I got out of the theater and saw how much hate she was getting from fans and how much hate the movie was getting in general, I was so confused, because to me, Rose Tico is like the heart of Star Wars. Like, her whole, like, we're not, you know, fighting what we hate, but we, or whatever the quote is, I can't think of it right now.
save what we love.
Yes, saving what we love, not fighting what we hate. That like really resonated with me, and I think it's a very good summary of what Star Wars is about. So I'll say Rose.
She's a good one.
Yeah. How about you, Sawyer? Sure.
Me, I mean, I grew up with Star Wars like from the beginning, and I think the prequels, I don't know for sure, but I think the prequels are the ones that I saw first, and so Padme was my girl. I have this really cute picture of me when I was 5. I desperately wanted to dress up as Padme, but of course my mom was like, how am I going to dress you up as Padme? and I just had this like white dress, like white plain dress, and I insisted that she get the lipstick, right? And I have this really cute picture, and I'm in pigtails because, you know, that's as much as elaborate as you can get with a little girl with short hair. But so Padme was my girl. I just loved her. I wanted to be her. Her scenes in on Geonosis were some of my favorite growing up, and I always have a fondness for that scene even now. And I just loved her. And I also had this action figure. My sister had this giant bucket of Star Wars action figures, but I had one, and it was just Padme in her like Imperial, like the one where it's the twin braids and that gown where she goes to the Senate. In that, in The Phantom Menace, and I just loved that action figure. It was so detailed. It had every little detail of her costume, eventually I grew up and I was able to do the lake dress. I made the lake dress from scratch, and that's probably the best, most impressive thing I've ever done craft-wise. I wore it once. I don't think I'll ever have a chance to wear it again, or if it even would fit me, but Padme has a special place in my heart, so.
Moving on to more, because there are a lot more women of Star Wars, and a lot more women of the Rebellion. I am also including women of the Resistance in this as well, because I think it is, there are a lot of parallels with the storytelling of the originals and the sequel trilogy and all of their accompanying other media, books and comics and things. So I feel like we could spend a lot of time on characters like Leia or Hera, Ahsoka, but there's other women that I would love to also highlight. As I was going through the list, I realized how many of them that I missed. I missed adding in like all of the women of Andor. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, that's a show that exists, and we're getting a second season really soon, hopefully. What are, besides like the main figureheads of the women of Star Wars, who are some other characters that you love from like this time period or that are involved in the Rebellion?
I know that her story like hasn't entirely been told yet, and that we are, you know, we have been given some hints that like it will be told in season 2. But I've been rooting for Biggs from like the moment we met her. You know, Andor season 1 I think was before Ahsoka season 2, so she was like the first Latina that like I got as like a normal girl, and like not a Jedi or like some hero that I couldn't really see myself in, but just like this working girl who had like a guy and she just wanted this like normal life. But I am really excited for her rebel arc. Hearing about that Star Wars Celebration was just really cool. You know, it's sad that she had to go through what she did in season 1 with Dedra's torturing and like kind of hearing all those kids being massacred and things like that. But I'm excited to see her team up with Cassian and like kind of help him get to the point where we see in Rogue One. I love that Cassian, actually, not to bring a man into it, but I love that he is so influenced by a lot of the strong women in his life, especially like Mon Mothma and his mom and Bix. And I'm assuming Clea will be another, but I love Bix. I'm really rooting for her to have like a really good ending, despite like what we've heard. A lot of people think she's going to die, but I'm holding out hope that she will get her peaceful life with Brasso. I do ship them.
I've never thought about that ship before.
Yeah, I'm a big Bix Brasso fan.
I can get with it.
Yeah, the scene where he's like standing with her outside of Marva's house, like something shifted in me. Lin's nose.
I mean, he's daddy, so.
Exactly. So, and she kind of deserves a guy like him, I think. Oh yeah.
She agreed.
Yeah. But yeah, Bix, honestly, like all of the women of Andor, like Jezzy like helping a sister out with Marva and like being there, like the whole, like all of the women in Andor, like with the Daughters of Ferrix, like are a community that a lot of people in the town and the city like seem to look up to. Like I love that the people of Ferrix looked into this like rebellious group of women for help. Mm-hmm. Like they were kind of like the forefront of the funeral march, and like I have a feeling like a lot of the women that were in season one will be kind of have big impactful relationships and situations that will kind of lead throughout season two. So yeah, long story short.
Something I loved about Andor was that it had such a wide variety or diverse roles that the women played in the show. We didn't, like, we had your Mon Mothma character, your Mon Mothma, who was like your political character, and that's how she's able to contribute to the rebellion through like political means. But then you have, you know, your blue collar workers like Bix, who just gets thrown into it. And then you have your other women who are already in the fight, who are your like on the ground kind of soldiers. I really do enjoy that. And something I was thinking about when you said that, you know, Cassian is someone who surrounds himself with very strong, powerful women, and he never questions them or that. It made me think about that. It's kind of a theme in a lot of our newer Star Wars that our male character will be surrounded by powerful women. Like even in Ahsoka, we have, you know, Ezra is with Sabine and Ahsoka. Even the Mandalorian, he's always working with like Cara Dune, or you know, however you feel about her actor, but the character. And then Bo-Katan and Ahsoka and Fennec Shand. So I think that's really cool that they are not always like the main character, but they are very integral to the male character's journey or story.
Yeah. Like Tala and Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I don't even...
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. It happens all the time.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I would even go so far as to say that Star Wars has kind of always had that in a way. You know, like, obviously we have our issues with the way that Leia and Padme's final act in their third movie are treated, but... Leia grounds Han pretty quickly. She also takes charge of the entire mission on the Death Star. So she's got the blaster. She's got the solution. She, like, Leia saves them. Mm-hmm. She saves their asses. And then they also have Padme, who, you know, I have my feelings about the relationship between Anakin and Padme, but Padme is Anakin's voice of reason. And that is emblematic through Attack of the Clones. Not so much in Revenge of the Sith, but that's the point of that movie. I would say, just to add to the conversation, that like, a character that I wasn't expecting to love in Andor was Mon Mothma, and I just absolutely loved Genevieve O'Reilly's portrayal. I felt like she did not get the flowers she deserved, and she just elevated that character so much for me, and it's nice. It's really great to know that we have characters like Cassian who, right out the gate, are respecting and trusting and leaning on the women in Star Wars. It really... I feel like we are seeing on screen, it's one area of representation that I feel like is handled pretty well in the Star Wars universe, and I think that that's only strengthened by like the books that we get about these characters and whatnot. But anyway, did I say what you were going to say, Liz?
I was going to say, like, we have Leia at the very beginning. She has taken control of her own rescue, and I feel like this newer Star Wars content that we've gotten, just, I feel like they looked back at that blueprint and said, yeah, we need more of this. We need to go back to this and make it about this. So yeah, exactly what you were going to say, basically, on that point. And it is nice to see that is recognized and that we are getting that. I would also say, on the topic of women rebels in Andor, Vel and Cinta, we got them as well. And you kind of said with the soldiers on the ground kind of thing, I was really happy to see I'm so excited to learn more about them, honestly. Mm-hmm. I want to know, like, how they got together. Like, you know, they're from such different backgrounds. Like, how did they kind of find a common ground between them? What kind of pulled them together? I would love, when Andor is over, to perhaps get a book about them, just the two of them, and, like, you know, the beginnings of their relationship and whatever missions that they were sent on. I feel like that's a possibility that we could get. I was really happy that we got their relationship, and just, it didn't feel heavy-handed. It just felt natural. It felt very real, like the conversations that they would have between each other. I really enjoyed the way that it rolled out, you know, how it was presented and how we didn't know about Vel's lineage or, like, you know, who she really was until later on in the series. I thought that that was a really cool way to connect her to the rebellion and differentiate her from Cinta's origins as well. So, I don't know, I just love how rich these character stories are, even though we've only gotten so much of it. Like, I just feel that they're very real, and they're very, like, I don't know, it's a really good representation of, like, what a woman is and what they would be like in this situation. And yet, as you said, like, we get them in all different aspects. We have Mon Mothma, the politician, we have those soldiers, we have Vix, who's just trying to live her life, but she also, you know, wants to help the rebellion as well. So, I don't know, I love the way that Andor depicted women so much. I can't wait for more.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add on to that. Well, like with Vel and Cinta, I kind of love that they're in a relationship, and that one is kind of struggling to balance the rebellion and the relationship. And the other is like kind of begging that, you know, they want that the sense of normalcy that, like, no, the relationship comes first, the rebellion comes last. So it'll be really interesting to see that dynamic kind of explored on a deeper level. But I love that Cinta is giving this different perspective to Vel about, like, the rebellion and, like, the harshness of, like, the world, because whether Vel likes it or not, she was born into, you know, money, and she probably had, like, a different experience growing up than Cinta did. Cinta was probably less fortunate. So they're offering, like, two different sides of the story. So that's a really interesting aspect that Andor, I feel like, has brought into the story, is that, like, not everybody from the rebellion is from this, like, is from the same background. Like, they're all joining for different reasons. And I love that. And I always think about it with, like, with Marva. While she's not my favorite character, I've been, like, vocal about that. Mm-hmm. I love that she was an elderly woman. Mm-hmm. And I love that she spent her final moments alive changing her life. Like, she was kind of like, she is the definition of it's never too late.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that about that storyline for Marva, was that she showed all of those people in that city square that it is never too late. Like, the Empire's claws are not always so going to be so deep. It's like, no matter how old my bones are, like, I'm always going to have the strength to push back. And she kind of, like, used her impact that she had on the city as, like, an inspiration to get them up and going, because I feel like they all kind of saw her as this, like, elderly sick woman and, you know, a burden. Like, Brasso has to leave work to go check on Marva, Bix has to close down the shop so she can go check on Marva, like, Cassian, you know, things like that. So it's like, she was like, I don't want to die like this. I want to die, like, going out with a bang. And I loved that aspect of her character, that, you know, like, yes, that she had a lot of flaws and she's disliked by, you know, a lot of people, including myself, but I can really respect that about her, that she spent those last moments of her life, like, dedicating herself to this cause that she had no idea would jump off the way that it did. And I loved that aspect of her character, and that she, like, died wearing the daughter of Ferrix clothes. And I don't know, that's, like, just a really good show of change, I think.
Mm-hmm. I love that the women of Andor specifically are, like, given the space and they're allowed to be, like, fully rounded characters that have different motivations and different priorities. And it has been in, like, the more I think about it, this idea of a well-rounded female character has existed in Star Wars from the beginning, I think. And I have a section that we'll talk about later of, like, the real women of Star Wars, like Carrie Fisher, who really made Leia the character that she is. But just thinking about, like, Mon Mothma is allowed to be a mother and a wife, but also has her priorities as a politician and has her priorities, you know, helping the rebellion in the way that she can. And something that I really enjoy about, that I've always really enjoyed about Star Wars and still enjoy whenever they give us more, is the existence of romance in Star Wars, because we have such strong women like Leia, like Harrison Dula, like Padme, who are strong and capable on their own, but they still hold this capacity for love and romance. And we don't always get that with a lot of female characters. I think a lot of when female characters are written in stories as like a heroine or a strong female character, a lot of those feminine qualities about them are stripped away in order to make them seem more, you know, stronger. Like, I don't need, you know, I'm more independent. I don't need a man, or I don't need what, like, love, whatever, or children. But those are still all things that are very, they're all things that women experience. Maybe not everyone wants to get married and have children, but there are a lot of women that do, but also have careers and also, you know, do XYZ. So I love that Star Wars, in a lot, not all of their female characters, I can, you know, there's a few that I can definitely criticize being written not in that way, but there are a lot that are, and I can always really appreciate that.
Well, one that comes to mind, just jumping right off of what you were saying, is Shara Bey was a pilot in the Rebellion, and she got herself a husband, and she mm-hmm. had a child, all while fighting in the Rebellion and being a fighter pilot. And so, like, that's a really good example of somebody who was allowed to create a life and a family, and, you know, on her own terms, while still being such a valuable part of this cause of the Rebellion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Harris and Jula as well.
Exactly, mm-hmm. yeah.
Nora Wexley, shout out to all my mm-hmm. Aftermath readers. Love her. Love that she is like, I'm a mother and a wife, but I also am a pilot, and I'm, you know, hunting down these Imperials, and I love that those are included in these stories, because I think a lot of Star Wars stories are heavily focused, you know, from the original trilogy, on the relationship of like a father and son. But we don't talk as much, because a lot of Star Wars characters have dead moms. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of Star Wars characters that are moms, and I would like to also remember them. And I feel like it's a subject that's not talked about quite as much as the father-son kind of relationship.
No, that's a really good point. And I mentioned this earlier, but just naturally segueing in the, well, we mentioned Nora and Shara and all these really great female characters. I think that, you know, we could do a whole episode on why Star Wars books are so wonderful, but especially since 2014, there has just been an emphasis on building out the Rebellion era, and in doing so, they have brought us so many wonderful female characters and offered the opportunity not just to Leia, but to Mon Mothma and to Hera and to these other characters, Iden Versio, you know, who have had this opportunity to flourish as these very well-developed characters that are so pivotal to the success, the ultimate success of Rebellion. And I'd love to talk about that for a minute, because I know we all love our Star Wars books, and I think that because we cater to such a unique audience, I feel like we have pull in the sense that if we talk about books, people are going to want to... I have faith that the people that listen to these shows are the people that would go buy a Star Wars book. So, you know, does anyone have a favorite, like, Rebellion era book?
I have to think. I immediately want to say Lost Stars.
But... Yeah, I was going to say
that. Yeah. That changed me as a person. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Lindsay? You had your, like, you were ready.
Oh. Well, I haven't read, just a disclaimer, I haven't read Aftermath trilogy. It's coming in the mail right now. But I would say the first sort of Rebellion era book that came out would be A New Dawn. And mm-hmm. I really love A New Dawn. I love John Jackson Miller's writing. Mm-hmm. And I love how he wrote Hera, a younger Hera meeting Kanan, and sort of Kanan having to like sort of take a back seat to Hera. kind of taking control of the situation once they meet. I would say that I still have very fond feelings for A New Dawn, and so if I was going to pick a favorite Rebellion era book, it might have to be that one.
That's a good one. Yeah. I would probably say Leia, Princess of Alderaan by Claudia Gray. Claudia Gray is one of my favorite Star Wars authors.
Oh, yeah.
Lost Stars was the first Star Wars book that I ever read, and it also changed me as a person. I was like, wow, what is this amazing world of Star Wars publishing? I want it all. I want more. But I really liked the Leia book. I think as much content with Leia that we have, I think, Lindsay, like you were saying earlier, we don't have a lot of Leia without Han, or Leia without mm-hmm. Luke, or Leia without any of the original trilogy characters. So being able to tell a story of, I think she's 16 in this, so it's just a couple of years before A New Hope. And we have Holdo is introduced in it. So Holdo is someone that she, not to spoil it or anything, but Holdo is like one of the first people that she meets that she, you know, is friends with and connected with through the rebellion later on, which I think is really cool, like outside of her realm of being like a politician's daughter or a politician herself. So I really like that book.
I really like also in that book, the way that Leia is with her parents, and how it's just like such a realistic representation of like a 16-year-old girl and thinking that her parents aren't paying attention to her. And she's like, why aren't you guys like looking at me or spending time with me? But she kind of realizes that her parents are like their own people. And I love the like hints and aspects of one of my favorite parts of that book is when Leia loves storms. Like, it's kind of talked about how she loves them and like why. And I feel like they almost describe Han perfectly. I don't know if that makes any sense, like why she loves storms. I don't know. It's been a while since I read it, but I'm probably gonna stick with my answer and say Lost Stars.
Yeah, that's
I kind of love like a tragic, yeah.
The rebellion book. Rebellion era book, rather.
Please,
we need a sequel.
I always say that Lost Stars is such a good entryway into Star Wars books. Because it is familiar. If you're new here or you're listening, Lost Stars is it is the timeline of Lost Stars is like runs kind of concurrently with the original trilogy. However, it features two brand new characters that, you know, were not in the movies, not in any other media. They were introduced specifically in this book. So you get to see, and it I don't remember, I guess it came out before the From a Certain Point of View books, but it is kind of like a full novel version of the From a Certain Point of View stories with these characters, which I love. And you don't have to have a ton of knowledge about Star Wars. I lent it to one of my friends who I had just watched all of the Star Wars movies with, and she had not seen, I don't think, any of them prior, and I was like, you're gonna really like this book, even though like you don't have to know a lot about Star Wars, as long as you've seen the original trilogy and know a little bit about it, you're gonna enjoy it, because it's just a really, outside of Star Wars, it's just a very good story.
Yeah. I just also loved Sienna's like stubbornness, which I feel like is why we definitely need a sequel for them. I need to know that like she has her entry into the rebellion, but I want it to be entirely her own thing if they do go with a sequel. But that'll be really cool. I'm excited.
But one thing I just wanted to touch on real quick before we change gears, though, is like I love that you mentioned Leia and her love of storms and how you felt that that was described in a way that could be reflected onto Han. I think that something that is so incredible about Star Wars books is that a lot of the time the authors are like diehard and lifelong Star Wars fans, and they really rely on the fandom and the community to kind of help them write these stories and incorporate things. And so like we had Katrina Dennis on the show a few weeks ago, and she shared this really cool anecdote about how Mike Chen talked to her about Ventress related things so that he could sneak in just a quick little Obi-Wan and Ventress moment in the book. Which is so cool, and you know, just another plug for the Star Wars books. They are so immersive, and in a lot of ways, I feel like they do a even better job of visualizing the galaxy than even, you know, you can do on screen. So yeah, check them out. But there isn't just books that have allowed us to expand on these wonderful characters. We also have Star Wars games, and in recent years, we've had quite a few really fantastic women in the Rebellion who have made prominent appearances in video games. Brooke, I know you added this because you may or may not be a major Jedi Fallen Order fan.
Crazy. Yeah, I just wanted to, and I was going to add the like Star Wars comics. We can talk about those as well. But there are so many other areas in the Star Wars world of media that have really awesome women characters. Jedi Fallen Order was like the first Star Wars game that I played, and I fell in love with Marin immediately, who becomes more of a prominent figure, not prominent figure, but she becomes more involved with rebellion related things in the second game. And I really liked Seer as a character as well. But I also played, I don't think a lot of people played the Battlefront 2 campaign, and I love Iden Versio's character. She is an Imperial defector. So you start the campaign as an Imperial, and then lots of shit happens. and she, her, and oh my god, what's his name? I lost it. Del. Her and Del end up, they both defect to the rebellion, and the rebellion at the time was kind of like the more the merrier, like, especially with like lower level Imperials, they were not quite as willing to like lock them all up, you know, because clearly like Aiden and Del showed a lot of remorse, and it's kind of another one of the stories where it's like it's never too late to change your mind and, you know, do some good. But yeah, I don't know how big of Star Wars gamers you are, or how familiar you are with the Star Wars games. But I just wanted to highlight that. And we are getting Star Wars Outlaws in a couple of weeks. That is being released. And I'm excited because it sounds like the story is going to be mostly focused on the Outlaws, or like the Star Wars kind of underground criminal world. But I would love to see where the character of Kay Vess goes, and if she ever, you know, becomes involved with the Rebellion or teams up with anybody from the Rebellion, because it happens. I think the setting of the game is in between. Is it in between Episode 5 and 6, I believe?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool.
It's between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
I am also really excited for Outlaws, especially because of what Umberly said at San Diego Comic-Con, that Kay is kind of the first story that's very different from what we're normally getting. Like, she's not someone who wants to join the Rebellion, and she's not someone who wants to join the Empire. She's just kind of her own thing, and I love that, because, you know, Cal is very, you know, I'm a Jedi, like, I know what I want to do, like, things like that. And I kind of love that Kay is just this, like, I don't know, like, I kind of just want to do my own thing.
She kind of reminds me already, just like from the clips we've seen and like Umberly talking about her, kind of reminds me a little of Dr. Aphra. In like the vibes, the kind of like, I'm, you know, I'm here for myself mostly attitude.
Yeah, I also think that in that concept, that dynamic works, is almost necessary for an open world game. And so this is going to be the first open world Star Wars game, like truly open world Star Wars game. And I think that I anticipate that there will be like multiple endings, probably one that is Rebellion focused and probably one that is Empire focused. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be like a true ending or not, but I kind of hope not, because then everybody gets to have their own experience with Kay, who is just in it for herself and whatever she can get out of the galaxy. And her Nyx. Nyx is so cute.
Nyx. Little baby. I'm also really excited for Kira in that game.
Yeah.
I am.
Oh,
really,
wait. I don't think I knew that. Is she in the game?
Yeah. She is in the game.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't think it's a spoiler. It's pretty well known.
She's in the trailer.
Okay.
What? I must have missed that. What?
Yeah, Kira. She's also on the poster, I think, now.
Oh my god. I had no idea. Okay, yay. That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have read Star Wars Bounty Hunters, but that has, like, amazing female characters in that. And we got to interview Ethan Sachs, and he, like, put a lot of care into characters as small as, like, Valance's ex-girlfriend, where he, like, actively made decisions where, like, he, like, wanted to do what was best for her rather than what was best for Valance. And I loved that. Like, I love when a writer is like, especially, like, a male writer who has a lot of control over female characters, who's like willing to, like, goes out of their way to ensure that these female characters are getting like a good story. I think, I don't know if that made any sense.
No,
totally. No, it does. It totally does.
Yeah, yeah. It was really refreshing to read, especially with what he wrote with the two main characters, Tonga, and I'm forgetting her partner's name.
Oh, it's
killing me. But yeah, they have like a fantastic ending. And even Cadelia, I really recommend it, especially for people like wanting to branch out into other parts of the Star Wars timeline.
Yeah, comics are great. I need to catch up on a lot of them. I go to my comic book store every single month and pick up so many comics, and then they all end up somewhere on this like bottom area of my shelf. And I'm like, one day I'm going to just binge all of them and it'll be great. And then I'd say that every single time I go to the comic book store, but I don't want to stop supporting my comic book store. So here we are. but I didn't want to end this conversation about the women of the Rebellion without highlighting some of the real women that have brought Star Wars to life. I wanted to specifically highlight Marsha Lucas for editing, re-editing the original Star Wars film before it was titled Episode 4, New Hope, because the audience reaction to the test footage of the first cut of the film was not great. And I think even George Lucas would say that she saved the movie.
Yes. And then, of course, without Carrie Fisher, we would be nowhere. Carrie Fisher, our beloved.
Did someone correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Carrie Fisher also edit, like, scripts? Like, she helped with the scripts sometimes?
Yes, she was a script doctor, which in, I guess, the industry is someone who goes back and edits dialogue and things, make things sound better, oftentimes uncredited for the work that they do on said scripts. So Carrie Fisher did that with a lot of films, not just Star Wars. I think The Last Jedi is the last one that she helped on. But I think it's a testament to how, like, intelligent and capable she is outside of just being an actor. And I feel like after Star Wars, she didn't act in a lot of things, which was still very present in the industry in other ways. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff, I think, in the original scripts for Star Wars that she was like, nah, this is fucking stupid. I want to do it this way, or I want to say it this way. And so we got a lot of Carrie Fisher in Leia, which I love because Leia's that girl.
And dialogue, I teach pre and post production, and I feel like dialogue is often looked at last by the writers. Like with my students, I noticed that it's not something that they were like very as heavily invested in as they were like with shots and you know, anything else or editing. But like the dialogue, I feel like is what really makes something. So, you know, her being a script doctor and like putting personality into a lot of these characters, especially with Leia, like is what made them so impactful, and like why the Skywalker saga is like still going on now, and like why after the 16-year and the 10-year break, like they're back. So yeah, she's an angel, and I still mourn her to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all do. She was such a huge part of what Star Wars became, and I think her impact will last as long as Star Wars as a franchise does. And it's, you know, it's really nice that they're continuing with a lot of Leia-focused stories, because I think she would appreciate that a lot. And I truly believe that she would have been Vivian Lyra-Blair's biggest champion. I could not think of a better casting for little Leia than Vivian Lyra-Blair. She was incredible. And she had Carrie's spirit throughout, and I think we all miss her a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't want to end on a sad note.
We could end on a note that would make a lot of men mad and talk about Kathleen Kennedy, because that's also who I had on this list. Because like it or not, y'all, she has been involved with Lucasfilm for a very, very long time, and she's worked with the likes of Spielberg and other really big filmmakers, and that is, you know, what, despite what people might say, this is like, she deserved the position when she was appointed as head of Lucasfilm, and has done a lot, I think, for, and you know, no one's above criticism, right? Especially in like the wake of this whole like Acolyte cancellation, but that's kind of a conversation of we can't really place the blame on anyone in particular right now, because no one has actually officially spoken on anything. But anyway, Kathleen Kennedy has helped shape what this new era of Star Wars is, and I am a big fan of this new era of Star Wars and a lot of the women that we have gotten out of it with these new characters and these new stories.
No matter which way you look at it, the truth is Star Wars was a dead franchise before Disney bought it, and Kathleen stepped in because she had a history with the company and with George Lucas, and she's done an absolutely phenomenal job, in my opinion. Has greenlit. I mean, we are living in an age where there is so much consistent Star Wars to consume, and that is a reality that a lot of people that just grew up with the originals, or even were, you know, like young adults during the prequel era, never imagined that we would get to. When the Clone Wars was canceled, it was done. It was like, okay, Star Wars is over, and now the cup is overflowing. And I think that, you know, I think she's incredible. She's still my dream podcast interview, and I think that we're lucky to have her leading the franchise and not backing down, because I cannot imagine what she has endured, not just as the CEO of Lucasfilm, but as an executive in Hollywood as a woman her entire career. By the way, folks, Steven Spielberg credits Kathleen Kennedy with saving Jurassic Park. So
there you go.
Mic drop.
I also really love Kathleen because she's such a big Cassian fan, and like I'm a big Rogue One and Andor person, and I feel like she was really on board with like keeping Andor afloat, like before and even what it is now, like when it was the Cassian and K2SO show. So yeah, I kind of love her for that, and I love how like active she is at all of the events, and how she's like there with all of the cast members, and she seems like a cool lady.
I loved the interview, I think, with Leslie Headland, where she talked about after she had written the first drafts of The Acolyte, Kathleen Kennedy was like, this is a great Star Wars story, now go write a great Leslie Headland story. And I really appreciate, you know, your feelings on The Acolyte as a show aside, good or bad. I love that she gave a creative the opportunity to use their creativity to make something fresh and new and exciting that was different from a lot, if not most, other Star Wars that we've seen before. And I hope that that continues. I hope she continues to hire filmmakers and creatives that are willing to, you know, push the boundaries of what Star Wars can be.
Well, to wrap up this wonderful episode, we are going to do some rapid fire questions and ask you guys to answer them as quickly as you can. No pressure, it's all in good fun. But the first question would be, and you, whoever goes first, whatever, whoever has something off the top of their head, what is your favorite theme park?
Silver Dollar City in Branson, Missouri.
No way! My partner has been begging me to go to Branson, Missouri.
Go!
That's amazing.
What about you, Savvy?
I'm really boring. I guess Disneyland.
That theme park? We're Disney park fans in this house.
Okay. Yeah, Disneyland. Oh, okay. Wait. Okay. I love Islands of Adventure in Florida. Yeah. Okay. Only because I love the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys have been on that ride, but
agree on that ride.
Okay, I was also like 13 years old the last time I went on it, so it was probably like, it's probably like way cooler in my head than I, like, it's been over a decade since I've last been on that ride, but I don't know, the Butterbeer? Yeah, okay. But Disneyland still remains. Yes. Sorry, go ahead, Sawyer.
No, I was just gonna say, I don't think you need to go upside down 6 times in 1 minute, personally.
Okay.
But.
Valid. I think I'd like, maybe it's like a special interest thing, but I like the like feeling of that. Like I feel like I come off of the ride a new person, I guess. Like all of my ailments have been like thrown off of my body. I don't know.
Fair enough. The adrenaline of it. Yeah. It kind of takes away all of the other anxieties that you normally feel on a regular basis.
Exactly.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. Okay, that's totally fair.
I guess some people need to go
Yeah. I wish that I had like a roller coaster right outside, so anytime that I felt like anxious, that I could get on it. And there is actually someone on TikTok who does that. Now that I realize
really?
It. Yeah. Okay. So that's her special interest. This one ride that she likes to go on, and you have to like actively flip it. So like some people will. I'm so sorry. This is not Star Wars at all. But like this is, she like
really
she's become like so strong because of like how much she flips it, and she like has her own TikTok where she'll track how many flips that she's done, and yeah, she goes like multiple times a week.
I'm gonna clip this because that's hilarious.
Okay,
that's crazy.
I'll have to send it to you guys. I'll find her. It's like a Ninja Turtle ride in the Mall of America or something.
Oh my god.
That's amazing. I love how we say rapid fire and then each rapid fire question turns into its own yap, but that's what we're here for, folks.
That's the point. What's the next question, Brooke?
Star Wars ship. Or ship. However you want to take that. However you want to take it.
Jin and Cassian. Jin and Cassian. And
I said a U-ring.
You said however you want to take that
itself.
Yeah.
You guys said that at like the exact same time.
Yeah. Jen and Cassian.
Amazing.
In a U-wing.
Oh. Real.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
There's some fan fiction prompt right there for you. All
right.
That's probably already been written.
Okay. Favorite Star Wars planet?
Ferrix.
Kobo.
Ooh. Kobo's a good one.
Nice.
Kobo is a good one. I knew you were going to say that.
Ferrix is cool too, though. Your turn, bro.
Oh, and our last one is your favorite Star Wars creature or like little guy, like little, like non-humanoid species.
A boggling.
Oh.
Okay, I'll say the Kowakian monkey lizard because I just love the name Kowakian monkey lizard.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
I always say I always forget the name too. The dragon looking thing on in Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah,
that you can't actually go up to.
It starts with an O, I think. It's not. I know it's, you're not talking about Ago Bago, but it's something
else.
It's really cute.
Oh, I need a plushie of it. Pagano.
And
I know.
Luke, there's such a cute comic with Luke and Leia that go to Pagano and they meet. Luke sees it. He sees the dragon and he's like imagining if he could like hold it as like a little guy. Like it's so cute.
Oh my god, he's so me. That's like every time I play Fallen Order, I'm like, it's a binog. That's what it is.
I'm obsessed.
The first time, so I've played Fallen Order like so many times. And there's a specific like little cave that you go into on Pagano, and I kept hearing, I was like, I'm going insane, but I'm hearing like breathing, like something breathing. And then I finally like turned my camera around and I looked up and the binog is just like staring at you from the hole in the cave. And he's like, hello. And it is the greatest thing. And I love it so much. And I want one as a pet.
Amazing. well, thank you so much to both of you for joining us tonight. This has been a great episode, and I had so much fun talking about the women of the Rebellion and all the wonderful female characters in the Star Wars universe. But as we wrap this up, could we please know where we can find you guys?
You can find me at Enderisms on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram, and you can find our podcast at Stardust Records on Instagram and Twitter. If you spell X, I'm sorry. But Stardust
Take
Records.
A shot every time someone says that on this podcast.
I know. The only thing is that Stardust Records does not have an O in the username. So Stardust Records.
Go ahead.
Sorry. And you can find me at Cosmic Love on Twitter and at Rebel Risen on Instagram and TikTok.
Amazing. Thank you guys so much. And thank everybody for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe or follow if you are on the podcast sites. And we will yap with you next time.